So with that introductory reading then, we will pass the evening over to our Brother Clyde to speak to us this evening on Moses chapter 3. Brother Clyde, please.
Thanks, Mike. Well, this, of course, is the third in a series, God willing, of four presentations on Moses. The first night, we talked about Moses, the person who thought he was somebody. The second night, we looked at how he learned that he was a nobody. And tonight, we want to go in sort of a chronological, semi-chronological journey through some of the main points of Moses' life and where his life ends up, essentially to show what God can do with a nobody. Like, for example, an impatient hothead killing an Egyptian to a timid recluse, self-isolating goat herd, tending his father-in-law's flock. That's the first 80 years of his life. To the man who the Lord spoke to face, as a man speaks to his friend. An amazing transformation, really. We continue with the life, work, and spiritual development of this man of faith this evening. And Moses, we need to understand as we move forward, was not a person unlike any one of us. What God can do with Moses, God can do with any nobody, even you and I. And as we go through this evening, there are some common themes that come up, and we'll try and pick those up as we go. And the first one, amazingly enough, is anger. Number two are the play on hands, as we'll show you in a moment. So anger and hands and grumbling, very prominent in this narrative. Broken promises. We see that in the reading that Mike read this evening, that they said, all that the Lord has said, we will do. So we've got broken promises. We've got intercession. Really, really emotional intercession. We've got idolatry. In the end, and God willing, we'll look at have a look at this next week in our fourth class, that is the people dwelling with God. So, for example, the hands of God and the hands of Moses and the hands of Pharaoh are all at play here right from the start. God told Moses to put his hand in his cloak and then take it out, and it was leprous, and put it back, and it was clean. What's that in your hand? He said, throw the staff on the ground. The snake materializes. Reach down and pick it up. And so this sort of summarizes the amazing dialogue that took place between Moses and God and the use of the idea of hands. And this also, of course, covers essentially the process of salvation. First of all, we have to face down the idols. Number two, we have to come to the blood of the Lamb. Number three, we have to pass through the water. Number four, we have to survive the wilderness. Number five, we enter the promised land. So the main themes, as we've already suggested, throughout this whole event are a remarkable foreshadowing of the work and process of salvation. Now, we did get into the plagues last week, covered them. I'd like to do a little bit of summarizing as we move on this evening. And Moses, the Lord said to Moses, see, I have made you like God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron shall be your prophet. Now, I think this is an important statement here that to help us to understand Moses' thinking and some of Moses' actions. God said to Moses, I have made you like God to Pharaoh and your brother Aaron as your prophet. So right away, it puts Moses on a very, very high plane in relation to his relationship with Pharaoh. And the Lord commanded Moses and Aaron in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants. He lifted up his staff and struck the water of the Nile. So here he's lifting up his hand, basically, with the staff in it. And all the water of the Nile turned into blood. The fish of the Nile died, and the Nile stank so that the Egyptians could not drink water from the Nile. and there was blood throughout all the land of Egypt. And this is an amazing little sort of vignette here where Moses is standing on the banks of the Nile at Pharaoh's house, which was probably the same house that he spent time in as a child, and the same water in the Nile that he'd been picked out of by Pharaoh's daughter and saved from the Nile. The same Nile that at the time when Moses was picked out was probably flowing in blood from the loss of Moses' contemporaries, his age group, as their bodies were snapped up by crocodiles in the river. So this, in a way, as Moses stands here now in this very same spot as I'm speculating, it's kind of like payback time for Moses, a very, very emotional, strong time in his life when he would be standing in this very place and turning the waters into blood, almost like payback. I'm only thinking about this maybe in the way I might think, and that's probably not the best way to be thinking. The purpose of the plagues, of course, was so that the Egyptians, and as we'll see, the Hebrews also, could better understand the power of the great I Am. So the 10 Egyptian gods, important gods, would have to go down like pins in a bowling alley in order to display and to demonstrate to the Egyptians that the God of Israel had a massive, amazing destructive power. And the Hebrews needed to witness that as well, the saving power of their God. And in that, they needed to see the destructive power of the Lord as well. So this is what the plagues are for. They're plagues that went against the gods of Egypt, specifically against various gods of Egypt. There was a great divide, of course, that took place, because the first plagues were plagues that were instituted by Moses and Aaron, and Moses' hand and his staff. Rise up early in the morning and present yourself to Pharaoh, and as he goes out to the water and say to him, thus saith the Lord, let my people go. So he's back in the same place at the water, that they may serve me, or else you will not, if you'll not let the people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies on you and your servants. Now this is the fourth plague. And there's swarms of flies, and God instituted and controlled the swarms of flies. But the special moment here was that Goshen, the land of Goshen, where his people dwelt, would be set apart so that there would be a division between the people of Israel, the Hebrews, and the Egyptian people, and the plagues that they experienced. And the Lord did so. So here we have the hand of the Lord stretched out now to create this division. And here's the summary, basically, of the plagues. We have the blood as Moses stretches out his hand. The frogs, Moses and Aaron stretch out their hand with their staff. Number three, the gnats. Aaron stretches out his hand, chapter 8, verse 16. The flies, this is where the Lord comes in, that you may know that I am the Lord, and the Lord did so. So it's the Lord's hand here. The livestock, the Lord picks that one up as well, and the Lord did so. So now we're into the Egyptian plagues. The dust, or the boils, now Moses picks up the dust and throws it into the air. So this is back to Moses' hands now being demonstrated in the action here. And the hail, the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand, 9:22. The locust, the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand. The darkness, the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand. So we had Moses on the first three plagues, stretching out his hand. We have Moses on 6, 7, 8, and 9, stretching out his hand. But on the 10th plague, the Lord struck down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt. So Moses was more or less out of the 10th plague. It's interesting how we see that kind of interaction where Moses and Aaron were involved in more of them. The Lord's only directly involved in two. We get to the final plague. And all these your servants shall come down to me and bow down to me, saying, now this is Moses actually saying to Pharaoh, your servants are going to come down and bow down to me, Moses, and say, get out, and all the people with you, and to follow you. And after that, I will get out. But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and Moses goes out from Pharaoh in hot anger. I got my two little red stars here, because the first one I gave to Moses for killing the Egyptian. The second one is this straight out statement that he goes out from Pharaoh in hot anger. And the Lord said to him, Pharaoh will not listen to you. He won't listen to you, and I'll harden his heart, that my wonders may be multiplied in the land of Egypt. So Moses and Aaron did all these wonders before Pharaoh, and the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the people of Israel go out of his land. Now, what's the issue here? Why was Moses angry? The Lord had stated that he would harden Pharaoh's heart, so why should Moses be sort of upset that Pharaoh's heart was hardened? Well, next to this, chapter 11, verse 3, it says this, moreover, the man Moses was very great in the land of Egypt, in the sight of Pharaoh's servants, and in the sight of the people. So Moses had sort of become iconic, really, by this time. He had become very great right throughout the land of Egypt. And I think that when he hardened himself again on this final plague, that's what sort of got Moses mad. But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he would not let them go. Then Pharaoh said to him, get away from me. Take care never to see me again, for on that day that I see your face, you will die. And Moses said, as you say, I will never see your face again. This is his parting shot, that he's angry. He's leaving Pharaoh now in hot anger. So the 10th plague, the Lord strikes down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, and the firstborn of Pharaoh, and so on. He summoned Moses and Aaron. This is now Pharaoh summoning Moses and Aaron by night and saying, up, get out of from among my people. And of course, he's not saying that because of an action of Moses. He's saying that because of the final action of God in striking the firstborn. He says, up, get out from among my people, both you and your people of Israel. Go serve the Lord, as you have said. Take your flocks and your herds, as you have said, and be gone. And this little line is added here, and bless me also. So this is interesting to me, because it was the Lord's hand, finally. Moses was looking for a blessing, maybe in irony or some sadness. Here was the great God of the Egyptians. Pharaoh is the God of the Egyptians, pleading with Moses and Aaron. But then this really monumental vision that the people had as Moses lifted up his staff over the hand of the sea. So the people got to the sea, and they realized that the Egyptians were pursuing them, and they had nowhere to go. They were kind of boxed in, and they cried unto Moses, and Moses said, why do you cry to me? Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the people of Israel to go forward. Lift up your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, and the people of Israel may go through the sea on dry ground. And I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they shall go in after them. And I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his hosts, his chariots and his horsemen, and the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I have gotten glory over Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. So this was now Moses standing on the side of the sea with his staff stretched out in his hand, becoming a vision, an icon, if you like, in the eyes of the people as they now cross the sea. Moses' hand this time, not the Lord's. So people needed to know that Moses was not only a God to Pharaoh, but Moses would be a God to them. Keep walking, he said, until you reach dry ground. And the people needed that witness. Then, at that moment, Pharaoh and his people being destroyed in the sea. Moses reflects in Deuteronomy chapter 4:34 by saying, by trials, by signs, by wonders, by war, by a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, and by great deeds of terror, for all of which the Lord your God did for you in Egypt before your eyes. And of course, this becomes a matter of Jewish poetry, Psalm 136, 10 to 16. To him who struck down the firstborn of Egypt, for his steadfast love endures forever, and brought Egypt, brought Israel out from among them, for his steadfast love endures forever. With a strong hand and an outstretched arm, for his steadfast love endures forever. To him who divided the Red Sea in two, for his steadfast love endures forever, and made Israel pass through the midst of it, for his steadfast love endures forever, but overthrew Pharaoh and his hosts in the Red Sea, for his steadfast love endures forever. To him who led his people through the wilderness, for his steadfast love endures forever. This was to be a familiar pose throughout their wanderings. Moses standing with his arm stretched out with his staff. This was what God could do with a nobody standing there in faith as that sea parted. This is the lesson. With God, all things are possible. Well, then we begin what I'm going to refer to as the great campout, for want of a better word, and it was. Moses made Israel set out from the Red Sea, and they went into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink the water of Marah because it was bitter. Therefore, it was named Marah. The people grumbled against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And he cried to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a log. I think this is correct in the NSV, a log, and he threw it into the water, and the water became sweet. Why did he pick up this log and throw it into the water? Well, I'm going to give him another star here for anger. This is how I see this taking place. Now, Ev and I have done a few CYC campouts, and many of you have done similar things. They are generally a major challenge. Feeding, organizing, 25, 30 young people, and a number of hangers-on, maybe adults, moms and dads, roadies, older boys that want to sleep in, come late for breakfast. It's always a challenge dealing with this type of situation, but Moses has a million campers. Maybe less, but probably not too much more, but a million campers, think of it. This is Moses' hands. He takes this log and throws it into the water. Well, why did he do that? I think he was angry. But there's an exhortation here, isn't there? And it goes something like this. When our journey is met with bitter waters, why do we grumble? When our journey is met with bitter waters, why do we grumble? Can our bitter waters be healed by a piece of wood? There's strong symbology here. Are our bitter waters made sweet by the cross of Calvary? And this is a lesson that is best learned early on in our pilgrimage. Sadly, it's a lesson that we have to keep learning again and again. The great campout continues, and the next event is that the Lord made a statute to them and a rule. He tested them, saying, the idea of testing is going to come up again. He tested them, saying, if you will diligently listen to the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his eyes and give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you that I put on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord your healer. So here's a direct reference, I think, to the 10 plagues. These are the things that God put on the Egyptians. And if they didn't listen to God, then as their community moved through towards the promised land, even they would be expecting to receive of the same types of things. Deuteronomy 28, verse 27, Moses is reminiscing again about this, and he says, the Lord will strike you with the boils of Egypt, with tumors and scabs and itch, of which you cannot be healed. So the question really here is, Would Moses become like a god to Israel? The Lord made him like a god to Pharaoh, but did he also become a god to the people? Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees, and they encamped there by the water. They had their first kind of moment of rest and quiet by these palm trees. And then they set out from Elim, and all the congregation of the people of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai. So they were kind of part way off to Sinai. On the 15th day of the second month after they had departed from the land of Egypt, the whole congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the people of Israel said to them, "Would that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by the meat pots and ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." So here they're thinking of the hand of the Lord again, symbolic of the Lord's power. And this, I think, and I think we have reason to believe this, that there was a substantial, considerable Egyptian lobby within the group. Whatever the numbers were, a million or whatever, there was a lot of Egyptians that came out, and there were a lot of Israelites who had probably done better than others in the land of Egypt. So they start grumbling again as they get in the place of the wilderness of Sin. And Moses said to Aaron, "Say to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your grumbling." And as soon as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. The Lord said to Moses, "I have heard the grumbling of the people of Israel. I have heard the grumbling of the people of Israel. Say to them, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord." So the Lord's hand is again in this. He increases the menu, if you like, in the wilderness. This was the Lord's hand against probably the Egyptian lobby, Pharaoh's hand still at work in the people. But the point was that God would supply his people. He would take care of his people. And by providing this meat and bread, that would prove that the Lord was, in fact, looking after them. It was sort of the stamp of approval that Moses gets now, as he appears before the Lord and before the congregation. Well, the Egyptian lobby was again quarreling. They moved from the wilderness of Sin by stages. If you just imagine this million people, they didn't sort of just start all at once and move. It would have been a long, slow progression of people moving eastward or wherever direction they were going. According to the commandments of the Lord, they camped at Rephidim, and there was no water there to drink. Therefore, the people quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." And Moses said to them, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?" And of course, we just read that the Lord had provided a test for him. If you do what I tell you, then I won't put all these diseases on you that I put on the Egyptians. The people thirsted there for water. And the people grumbled against Moses and Aaron, "Why did you bring us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" So Moses cries to the Lord, "What shall I do with this people? They are almost ready to stone me." And the Lord said to Moses, "Pass on before the people, taking with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the rock, the Nile, and go. Behold, I will stand before you, and there on the rock of Horeb you will strike the rock, and water shall come out of it, and the people will drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. He called the name of the place Massah and Meribah because of the quarreling of the people of Israel, and because they tested the Lord by saying, is the Lord among us? Now, again, we have Moses' hand, staff, hitting the rock, Pharaoh's hand still in play. Why did you bring us out of Egypt to kill us and our children? The Egyptian lobby, once again. But remember this, when we quarrel and complain, we are directly questioning God. When we quarrel and complain, this is an insult to the great I Am, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the God of Israel. An insult to our Heavenly Father who knows how to provide for his children. When we quarrel, we are testing God. They were testing the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? Now, I've often thought about this, and I'm going to put it this way. If you as a father came home one day and found your children huddled in the corner sobbing, you ask them, what's wrong? And they said, Daddy, we don't know if you'll be able to feed us. We don't know whether you'll be able to quench our thirst. We might starve to death. We just don't know whether you can do this, Daddy. And that, I think, is what we're saying to the Lord, our Father. And I'm sure he doesn't like us saying that, because he wants us to know that he is among us and he will take care of us, and we need to have that faith. Now, the strange event here with the Amalekites, and Moses builds an altar and calls it the Lord is my banner, and he says, because hands were lifted up against the throne of the Lord, and the Lord will be at war against the Amalekites from generation to generation. Now, these people, the Amalekites, had showed themselves to be kind of treacherous. They came at the sort of the rear guard of this progression, this flow of people. Again, 1,000 people or 1,000,000 people going through the wilderness. They weren't just going as one great band. They were streaming through. The Amalekites came and attacked them from behind. The Amalekites' hands were lifted up. They came and attacked the Israelites at Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, choose some of our men and go out to fight the Amalekites. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hands. So Joshua fought the Amalekites as Moses had ordered. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went to the top of the mountain. And Moses' hands were held up by Aaron and Hur. And as long as they were held up, the Israelites were victorious. The next moment is at Sinai, and we're going to call it the golden calf. It's the most frightening event to me, the most frightening event in all of Scripture. Moses went up on the mountain, as we read in chapter 19, to receive the most important set of laws mankind would ever receive. The mountain was shaking, the mountain was on fire, there was thunder, earthquakes, probably spewing lava. The people were excluded from the mountain. They had to stay down below the barriers. Moses was going to the top of the mountain to receive the most important law that has ever been given to mankind. What this whole journey was about, leaving the 2,000 some odd gods in Egypt, to worship the one true God, the great I Am, at a worship service in the wilderness. And where was Moses? They said, he was taking too long in the mountain. This, again, provides a window of opportunity, I'm going to call it the Egyptian lobby, to get going again. Moses said he was going to bring us out into the wilderness to have a big worship service, to have a big party. And where is Moses? Where is he now? We haven't seen him for days. And this molten calf appears, like one of the many gods of Egypt. These be your gods, O Israel. This is the Lord showing his hand in a great, awesome, terrible show of power on the mountain. And coming back down with this law, the first one of 10 that said, you shall have no other gods before me. And this is what I find so terrifying, actually, in really reading this piece of scripture, that how could they do that? Although we also have to admit, and maybe it's just me, that we have kind of the same type of problem, that, well, the glory of God and the word of God and the grace and the wonder of God is being shown directly to us. We've already got idols in our heart that we're predisposed to. Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob and tell the people of Israel, you yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you out to myself. And this isn't that long since they crossed that sea. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my commandment and covenant, you shall be a treasured possession, my treasured possession among all the people. For all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These were the words that you shall speak to the people of Israel, said God to Moses. And these were the people who were going to take these amazing laws. They were completely opposed to what they'd seen in Egypt, completely opposed to anything that the world has ever seen. One God. Only one God. But here we have God saying to Moses, go down for your people whom you brought out of the land of Egypt. Whom you brought out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly, quickly. That's amazing. A couple of months, maybe, quickly out of the way that I commanded them. They have made for themselves a golden calf and worshipped it and sacrificed to it and said, these are your gods, O Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. Now, therefore, let me alone, that my wrath, this is God's wrath again, may burn hot against them, that I may consume them. The Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people, and let me alone, that I may burn with hot anger against them, consume them, and order that I may make you a great nation. Moses turns and goes down from the mountain with two tablets of testimony in his hand. And these tablets were written on both sides, in the front and on the back, and they were written by the hand of God. Tablets were the work of God. The writing was the writing of God engraved on the tablets. And Joshua heard the noise of the people as they shouted. He said to Moses, here is a noise of war in the camp. But he said, it's not a sound of shouting for victory, for the sound of a cry of defeat, but the sound of singing that I heard. And as soon as he came near the camp and saw the calf and dancing, Moses in great anger burned, hot anger. And he threw the tablets out of his hands and broke them at the foot of the mountain. He took the calf that they had made and burned it with fire and ground it to powder and scattered it on the waters and made the people of Israel to drink it. Hot anger. He throws the tablets out of his hand. The tablets that had been written by the finger of God. Now Moses was an intercessor, of course. The next day the people recognized what had happened. And we'll pick up a couple of verses from Numbers in a few moments. He said to the people, you've sinned a great sin, and now I will go up to the Lord. Perhaps I can make atonement for your sins. So Moses returned to the Lord and said, alas, this people has sinned a great sin. They have made for themselves gods of gold. And now if you will forgive their sin, but if not, please blot me out of your book that you have written. It's an amazing statement by Moses for all that he had invested, pleading for their forgiveness. And if God was not prepared to forgive them, he said, please take me, Lord. Blot me out of the book. The Lord said to Moses, whoever has sinned against me, I will blot out of my book. But go now, lead the people to the place about which I have spoken to you. Behold, my angel shall go before you. Nevertheless, in the day when I visit you, I will visit their sin upon them. So what happens here, brothers and sisters, we know that God said, I'm not going with you. I'm not going to go up to Sinai with you. To the promised land with you. I'll send my angel, but I don't want to go with you because I might just get really angry along the way and I might consume you and I'll visit your sin upon you. So Moses intercedes, and the Lord said to Moses, this very thing that you have spoken I will do, for you have found favor in my sight, as he pleads and intercedes for the people. And Moses says, please show me your glory. He wanted to get some type of response from God. And God said, I will make my goodness pass before you and will proclaim before you my name, the Lord. And I will be gracious to you, and I will be gracious and will show mercy on whom I show mercy. But he said, you cannot see my face. Behold, there's a place for me where you shall stand on the rock. And while my glory passes by, I will put you in a cleft of the rock, will cover you with my hand. Here again is the Lord's hand, until I pass by. And when I take away my hand, you'll see my back, but you'll not see my face. So Moses says in chapter 33, he says, if you don't go with me, he says, I'm not going. We're not going to go up to the promised land if you don't go with us. It's not just good enough for you to put your angel there. If your presence will not go with me, Exodus 33:12-16, if your presence will not go with me, do not bring us up from here. For how shall it be known that I have found favor in your sight and I and your people? Is it not in your going with us that we are distinct, I and your people, from every other people on the face of the earth? And this was true. What a great lesson that is for us. This was something entirely new that the world had never seen before. A nation with one God. Not 2,000, but one God who had delivered his people, who lived and dwelt among his people, and whose presence went with his people. And Moses is bold enough and has a good enough relationship with his God to say, if you don't go, I'm not going. Nobody goes. So God repents. He relents. He tells Moses to cut himself two tablets of stone, go up to the mountain again, which you broke, by the way. He makes this statement to Moses. So Moses cuts two tablets of stone like the first, and he rose early in the morning. He went up on Sinai, as the Lord had commanded him, and took in his hands two tablets of stone. So we're back again with this kind of symbology of Moses now taking stones that he had cut back up to the mountain, and God inscribes them. The Lord descended in the cloud and stood with him there and proclaimed the name of the Lord. The Lord passed before him and proclaimed, the Lord, a God, merciful, gracious, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love and thankfulness, keeping the steadfast love for thousands, forgiving iniquities and transgressions and sin, but who will by no means clear the guilty. And God willing, next week we'll have a look at how this is really the statement of the gospel here in Exodus. Moses was a great intercessor. Yes, Moses was a type of Christ. Psalm 106, they exchanged the glory of God for the image of an ox that eats grass. Imagine that. Like I said, here was Moses up in the mountain getting this amazing law of one God, and they were building an image of an ox that eats grass. They forgot God, their Savior. Who had done great things in Egypt, wondrous works in the land of Ham, and awesome deeds by the Red Sea. Therefore, he said he would destroy them had not Moses, his chosen one, stood in the breach before him to turn away his wrath from destroying them. People complain in the hearing of the Lord about their misfortunes. And I've I've got two pages stuck together. We got a piece from Numbers here, two pieces from Numbers. People complained in the hearing of the Lord, and the Lord heard it, and his anger was kindled. And Moses prayed to the Lord, and because of this fire that was consuming members of the camp, and Moses prays again, and the fire dies down, and the name of the place was called Terebah, because the fire of the Lord burned among them. And Moses heard the people weeping throughout their clans because of this fire and what they had experienced, everyone at the door of their tent. The anger of the Lord blazed hotly, and Moses was displeased. And Moses said to the Lord, "Why have you dealt ill with your servant? And why have I not found favor in your sight that you lay the burden of all this people on me? Did I conceive all this people? Did I give them birth that you should say to me, 'Carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries a nursing child to the land that you swore to give to their fathers'? Where am I to get meat to give to all this people? For they weep before me and say, 'Give us meat that we may eat.' I am not capable to carry all this people alone. The burden is too heavy for me. If you will treat me like this, kill me at once, if I find favor in your sight, that I may not see my own wretchedness here." And I give him another star for anger. Moses was clearly angry to the point of saying, "Just kill me, Lord. Don't put me through this embarrassment." We have a bit of sibling rivalry, of course, in Numbers. And I bring this up because of this statement. Now, the man Moses was very meek, more than all the people who are on the face of the earth. He said to his siblings, "Hear my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. But I speak to him in a dream. I speak to them in a dream, but not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. With him I speak." I think the words are actually face to face, clearly, and not in riddles. "And he beholds the form of the Lord. Why then are you not afraid to speak to Moses?" The bronze serpent, of course. Again, the hand of Pharaoh is still working away. And talking about Egypt, and brought us out to die in the wilderness. There's no food, no water, and we loathe this worthless food. So the Lord sends fiery serpents. Now, the serpent, of course, was big in Egypt. That was one of the gods of Egypt. So he sends fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people so that many of the people of Israel died. And Moses prayed for the people again, and God tells him to make a bronze serpent and set it on a pole. So Moses' hands now are making a serpent and putting it on the pole. So we have the serpent in Eden, we have the serpent in Egypt, we have the serpent in the wilderness, as they're getting close to the promised land, actually. And we understand that this drama that's being worked out for the world, in front of the world, and for us as well, was all about the cross of Christ. It's about Jesus. But another big one. Once again, there's no water, and they're getting very close to the promised land. No water for the congregation, and they assemble themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. The people quarreled with Moses. "Would that we had perished with our brothers, perished before the Lord in the land of Egypt. Why have you brought the assembly of the Lord into this wilderness that we should die here, both we and the cattle?" Again, as they said, they've been in the wilderness quite a long time. "And why have you made us come out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? There's no place for grain or figs or vines or pomegranates. There's no water to drink." And Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the entrance of the temple of the tent of meeting and fell on their faces. And the glory of the Lord appeared to them. The Lord said to Moses, saying, "Take the staff, assemble the congregation, you and Aaron, your brother, and tell the rock before their eyes to yield its water. So you shall bring water out of the rock for them to give drink to the congregation and their cattle." And Moses took the staff before the Lord as he had commanded him. He gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, shall we bring water out of this rock?" And Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock with his staff twice. And water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank. And their livestock drank. He had been told, of course, to speak to the rock, because if he spoke to the rock, it would be the Lord's hand. But if he struck the rock, there would be a very strong message to the people that it was Moses' hand that had done this. And this was wrong. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not believe in me, that if you just spoke to the rock, in the beginning, God said, let there be light, and there was light, and all they had to do is speak to the rock to uphold me as holy in the eyes of the people of Israel. Therefore, you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given them. These are the waters of Meribah that the people of Israel quarreled with the Lord. Through him, he showed himself to be holy. It's a great lesson here about our understanding of the holiness and the need for us to continually understand the holiness of God, to uphold the holiness, of God in the eyes of the people of Israel. Well, this was really hard on Moses. He pleaded with the Lord at that time, saying, oh, Lord God, you have only begun to show your servant your greatness and your mighty hand. For what God is there in heaven or on earth who can do such works and mighty acts as yours? Please let me go over and see the good land beyond the Jordan, that good hill country in Lebanon. But the Lord was angry with me, said Moses, because of you. And would not listen to me. And the Lord said to me, enough from you. Do not speak to me anymore. Don't speak to me again of this matter. Deuteronomy chapter 3, verse 23, as Moses reminisces about this. This hurt Moses. He mentioned this in Deuteronomy three times. Furthermore, the Lord was angry with me because of you. And he swore that I should not cross the Jordan, and I should not enter the land, the good land. Deuteronomy 4:21. And you're going to die on the mountain, said God. And you shall see the land, but you shall not go there into the land that I'm giving to the people of Israel. Deuteronomy 32 and verse 50. And I have two words that I want to put in here as we close this out. And I'm calling it community culpability. Community culpability. Psalm 106, verse 32 to 33, they angered him at the waters of Meribah. They angered him at the waters of Meribah. And it didn't go well with Moses on their account. For they made his spirit bitter, and he spoke rashly with his lips. Here's the man that we read about in Hebrews. Now Moses was faithful in all God's house as a servant who testified of the things that were to be spoken later. But Christ, of course, is faithful over God's house as a son. So this amazing parallel between this man who is faithful as a servant over God's house with the Christ who would be faithful over God's house as a son. And we are his house, says the writer of the Hebrews. If indeed we hold fast our confidence and our boasting and our hope, we're part of this. Hebrews 11:24, by faith Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated by the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. He was looking to the reward. He had his eyes fixed on the promised land. By faith he left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king, for he had endured his seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and sprinkled the blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch them. He saw the promised land. That was his ultimate goal. Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo to the top of Pisgah, which is opposite Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land, Gilead as far as Dan, all Naphtali, the land of Ephraim, and Manasseh, and all the land of Judah, as far as the western sea, and the Negev, the plain. That is the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees, as far as Zoar. The Lord said to him, this is the land of which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to your offspring. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not go over there. Now Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. He buried him in the valley in the land of Moab, opposite Beth Peor. And no one knows the place of his burial till this day. Moses was 100 years old when he died. His eyes were undimmed, his vigor unabated. The people of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days. Moses was saying, I'm only 120 years of age. I feel good. I'm ready for another 40 years. No. And here's Moses speaking to his people about his trusted friend, the great I Am. There is none like God, O Jeshurun. Jeshurun is a poetic term for God. There is none like God, O Jeshurun, who rides through the heavens to your help, through the skies in his majesty. The eternal God is your dwelling place, and underneath are the everlasting arms. Not the 2,000 gods of Egypt who said nothing, did nothing, could do nothing, but the one true God who bore them on eagle's wings, the great I Am, who is their dwelling place, and who keeps them in his everlasting arms. Next week, God willing, we will see how this promise of dwelling comes to pass and lays out the final purpose of the great I Am dwelling with his people, Israel.